Welcome to the WP Builds Podcast, bringing you the latest news, interviews, and fun for the WordPress community. Now, welcome your host, Nathan Wrigley.
Hello there, and welcome once again to the WP Builds Podcast. You've reached episode number 449, entitled Making Digital Accessibility a Reality, Anna Mika Bovelet's CloudFest Hackathon Journey. It was published on Thursday, the 11th of December, 2025. Before we get into the podcast, a few bits of housekeeping. Our Black Friday deals page, believe it or not, is still up. You can find it at wpbuilds.com/black. Any deal that is still on that page is still available, the idea being that they will disappear from the page once the date of expiry has been reached. So you never know, there might be some money burning a hole in your pocket around Black Friday. And if that's the case, go check out that page. There may still be some deals that you want to scoop up. wpbuilds.com/black. The other thing to mention is that we are in the market for some new sponsors. We have a WordPress-specific audience, which is pretty large. And if you would like your product or service put in front of that WordPress-specific audience so that you can gain some recognition for your product or service, head to wpbuilds.com/advertise to find out more. The WP Builds podcast is brought to you today by GoDaddy Pro. GoDaddy Pro, the home of managed WordPress hosting that includes free domain, SSL, and 24/7 support. Bundle that with the Hub by GoDaddy Pro to unlock more free benefits to manage multiple sites in one place, invoice clients, and get 30% off new purchases. You can find out more at go.me/WPBuilds. And sincere thanks go to GoDaddy Pro for helping keep the lights on at WP Builds. As I said, if you want to join them, head to wpbuilds.com/advertise. Okay, what have we got for you today? Well, today I am joined by Anna Mika Bovelet. She is the lucky winner of two CloudFest hackathons in the year 2025 and the year 2024. Anna Mika was able to scoop up the prize at the hackathon. Now, it may be that you don't know what a hackathon is, and I didn't either. So I'm just going to spend a moment explaining what it is. So the CloudFest hackathon takes place in Germany. It's actually coming up in 2026. They're repeating the whole thing, and I will make sure to put some links into the show notes so that you, if you're interested in this, can go and make yourself available and find out how you can participate. But it really is rather interesting. A bunch of people gather in a room and they have some projects which they are going to work on, and they spend 2 or 3 days wrangling that problem and hopefully coming up with a solution. And the idea is that at the end, a panel of experts vote and a winner is announced. Well, as I said, Anna Mika, the team that she was working with, won it, and she was lucky enough to have that happen twice in a row. But the curious thing about the CloudFest hackathon is that when I went, I really didn't know what to expect. I thought it would be a bit like a WordCamp, but it really isn't. You have to be invited into the room, for one thing. So you have to put in an application. That application has to be accepted. And then on the first day, the first thing that everybody does is decide which of the projects they're going to work on. Obviously, some people worked on the one that you're going to hear about in the podcast today, but there were loads of others going on, and in various other places you may have found out about those. But I kind of thought to myself, well, obviously everybody will just go and do the things that they're interested in, and some of the tables will be empty and some will be full. And it really didn't work out that way. It was amazing how everybody kind of fell into groups, and those groups were of equal size. They then spend a few days hacking away, trying to figure out a solution to the problem that their team is on. And then, like I said, they throw them all together and there is a vote at the end. It really is an extremely interesting enterprise. And having been, I can honestly tell you that it's worth its weight in gold. You'll probably make lots of connections in terms of networking. No doubt you'll meet some people from different parts of the world who are really expert in their own area. So can I encourage you to go and check out the CloudFest Hackathon? Go Google it in the year 2026, or just click on the link in the show notes. Anyway, this podcast with Anna-Mika is explaining all of the different bits and pieces that she was working on, what she thought about the CloudFest Hackathon, and how their project has been maintained since then. You will get to hear that she would love for there to be more support after the hackathon is over, but really interesting, certainly worth a listen, and I hope that you enjoy it. I am joined on the podcast by Anna-Mika Bovlett. Hello.
Hi, Nathan.
Nice to have you with us. We're going to pretend like we haven't been talking for the last half an hour about absolutely everything. And we got pretty deep pretty quickly there.
We should have recorded that.
We should have recorded that, maybe another day. But Anne's going to be talking to us today about an experience which happened earlier during the year. And actually, for Anne, it happened a year prior to that as well. I'm talking about CloudFest and the CloudFest Hackathon. But that's going to happen in a few minutes' time, because before we do that, I think we should get to know you a little bit more, Anne, if that's all right. So just give us your little bio. Tell us who you are, the bits that you're most proud of.
Give us your little bio. Oh my gosh, that's a dangerous question. Okay. So, well, I am Dutch, half Danish, half Dutch, actually. I grew up in the Netherlands. I currently reside in Germany, but I love to live all over the world. I've been in web design since 1998, so that probably tells folks I'm really old. I come from this very creative family of an Oscar-winning animator, musicians, sculptors, painters. And I have this stray commercial gene that no one knows where it comes from. Yeah, I always find it so hard. I mean, I should get this piece of thing written and then have it on my screen and then rattle it down.
Yeah, read it out. But no, I think it's more human that you do it this way.
Yeah, well, okay. So let me give you the red line through our life.
The through line, we would say.
The thing is, I learned in life after a long career in corporate stuff. I've been a recruiter. I've been a secretary at some point. I worked in legal stuff, but I've always been on this creative side, and there is one thing that has been most important to me forever, is when you do something for yourself and you make a living with that, or it benefits yourself in whatever way, it is great. But if you are able to do something with or for a community that benefits thousands, possibly millions, that's bliss. Mm. That's something you can continue doing even if you're too old for all the other fun things. So when I got into what I do, web design, being a creative agency, I've always been hanging around in communities, and I enjoy sharing my knowledge and learning from others. And then about 5 years ago, almost six now, I ran into something called digital accessibility. Mm. And I have ADHD on steroids. It means I am bored by something within no time. But digital accessibility never bores me, because it is about people. It is about design. It is about development. It is about thinking about your processes. It is about speaking with people. And it is about motivation. And these are ingredients that make digital accessibility very, very like a great dish that never bores you. There's not one day the same. The only thing that I find really hard to do, not because I can't, but because it gets boring, is testing. But thank God there are so many people out there who are really good at testing too, who enjoy this.
Yeah. And do you know what's really curious about the whole accessibility thing, which is like not like any other, well, maybe there are some aspects of like web development which have this, mm-hmm. but I'm struggling to think of one. It's got a moral component.
Yeah.
It's got, there's a bit of morality in there. So making, I don't know, an e-commerce website, it might be fun, right? And you might make a load of money out of it, and you enjoy the marketing experience or what have you. But there's not much in the way of morals there. You know, you don't have to apply your morals too much. But with the accessibility side of things, I think there is that component. You know, you've identified that if you don't do that work, then you've built something which is at the exclusion of this cohort of people over there and this cohort of people over there. And going the extra mile has that feel to it, you know, that flavor to it, that morality of making sure that you're capturing everybody and you're scooping everybody up and you're making it so that all the people all the time can look at all the things, which is pretty cool.
It is cool, but I've learned one thing. It's also in my headline on LinkedIn that says small changes happen through love and compassion, big changes happen through capitalism.
Interesting. Yes, yeah, so a bit of both.
I enjoy this way too much. This is a very dark corner of my character, but I love to use the commercial aspect as a bat, baseball bat, to put some sense into people. And it's unfortunate, you know, it's money makes the world go round. So I'll keep using that argument to people to make things inclusive. And I will always say it is a moral obligation. It's a human right. But people don't get it, or their bosses don't get it. What's interesting, though, is when you talk about this to children, if even from the age of 6, 7, and you explain to them like, hey, look, grandma is having trouble ordering something in this shop because she cannot see the differences between the color so well anymore, or hey, daddy has trouble when someone makes it like this because he will fall down or he will not be able to use it. And then when you go up to 12, 13, 14-year-olds, where they're very malleable and still thinking about a future in tech maybe, and you start talking to these kids about that, you will see that they think this is really cool. Because it gives... to them, it gives them a sense of power. You know, if you are, we think as adults, we just want everything fast. We want to have a big margin on whatever we do, right? Profitability here, profitability there. But if you teach a 12, 13, or 14-year-old, like, listen, if this is incorporated in the way you think, you are going to be much better at this than everybody else. The results will be better. Of your designs, of your coding, you're going to open the doors to your parents and your grandparents and yourself when you're old at some age. And this always surprises me that I don't see that group approached so much for digital accessibility, because we're not going to solve things in this day and age. The thing is, adults can't solve anything. It's
you're
our
waiting
children.
You're waiting for the next generation to come along and fix it. That's interesting. Do you know what, though? There's never time to say what you just said. Because of the financial component, what have you, and the need to ship things quickly and what have you. And I feel like time is to some extent the enemy of widespread adoption of accessibility. If we all had like 2x the amount of time to fulfill the same project... and, you know, maybe there's a bit of finance thrown in there as well. But if there was just more time available, you could imbibe that information, but also you would have the time to do the different bits and pieces. Let me ask you where you're currently doing your work, because I know that you have had a variety of different fingers in different pies, working for a variety of different organizations and helping them with their products. Where has been most recently some of the different things that you've been involved in the WordPress space?
And then we'll recently, get to the hackathon. I was in a fantastic project for, I'm not going to name the company, but it's a company in the online gambling industry. With online games and sports. And I've had a lot of discussions with people about that, people who are telling me that is immoral to do that, blah, blah, blah. And I disagree with that. And I think it's incredibly discriminating when you say, oh, and don't let anyone use your talent to make a game website with commercial intent more accessible. I mean, that is like so condescending, because someone has a disability, we have to protect them from themselves. Someone cannot see well or cannot hear well. I mean, it's about being equal and having equal access and treating people.
It's literally a bit like saying we shouldn't provide ramps in front of betting shops so that people who have wheelchairs can't get in, and we need to protect themselves from themselves. Mm. Yeah, that's curious. That's a really bizarre argument, isn't it?
I've been in dialogues offline. I've been into a lot of rows about that, and but it's also interesting. So I'm currently consulting a couple of companies on their process of making things more accessible, a few of them in the States, a few in Germany, one in Switzerland. I'm growing more and more into this consulting role. And I have this method of operations these days. If I can go by car and anything under 6 hours is no problem, I will go there in person, I will give training, and I will give people the tools, not tools literally, but I mean the way of thinking, so that a design department is going to give the right instructions to the developers, or the developers think like, oh, the design gave us this, but not so sure if that's going to be accessible. So it's changing more into uniting departments in companies about accessibility that normally didn't need any uniting. That could be islands.
Yeah.
And that's more where I'm going. And there's another part where I'm going, but I'm mainly doing that for myself. I am running around in WordPress in the community, and I am totally going the developer road now, which is, well, that's kind of hell froze over it. But it's, you know, I had to learn so much about development beside HTML and CSS to be able to guide others in accessibility, that now I'm like, why should I sit and wait until someone accidentally messes up?
Yeah.
Let's get in there and talk about it.
Do it yourself. Yeah, that's interesting. Mm. So the main thrust of this conversation, the reason why we got you on, is that earlier this year in Germany, in a little town called Rust, I think that's how you pronounce it, there's this event which takes place, and it's called Cloudfest, and it's this giant, I mean really huge, in-person event. It's not really all about WordPress. In fact, it's a tiny proportion of it is about WordPress. Anything really which is to do with the cloud or internet infrastructure or what have you. So hardware, software, all sorts of things. Yeah. But there's this little bolt-on bit which happens on the sidelines. And in this case, it happens prior to the main event and kind of overlaps it a little bit. It's called the hackathon. And the hackathon is something that I was not familiar with, but I attended this year. And the hackathon is, do you mind me sort of summarizing it quickly for our listeners? Yeah, so the hackathon is, you kind of apply to be a part of it. You apply to have a project, and you apply to just be an attendee. And the idea is that they find projects which during the 3 days of the hackathon people will work on. So they select, I think it's 10 projects. Those 10 projects are then assisted by the attendees, and they kind of earmark the attendees nominally so that they've got a broad spread of people over lots of disciplines. So it's not all just hardcore developers or just hardcore marketers or hardcore SEO people. The idea is there's a mix of people in the room. And on day one, the people who have been selected to run their projects stand up and say, this is what I hope to achieve during the next few days. And then people vote with their feet. They listen to the people presenting. They vote with their feet and they go and sit at a table. I thought that was just going to be a total mess, not having been to one of these hackathons before. I thought there's going to be two or three projects which are really popular and the others are just going to be empty. That's not how it panned out at all. It just worked beautifully. Everybody went and almost like they, you know, they've been told, but they hadn't, where to go and sit. And then it begins. Then out come the whiteboards. The projects get worked on. It's furious for several days. Everybody goes, you know, goes to bed at night, although a lot of people sort of seem to stick around, work on it for 3 days, and at the end of those 3 days, the summation happens, and the projects, where they got to, the projects, it's announced, you know, what they achieved and what have you. And then a panel of experts go away and decide who the winner is. And, you know, that's a thing. And you won twice.
My team won.
Yeah, okay, sorry. Yeah, that's right. I should have said that. Your team won, but the project that you were shepherding was the winner twice in a row. Yeah. And so that's the thing that I want to talk about. So we could go to the previous year, but let's keep it to this one from this year. Tell us about your project, because it's so interesting what you are trying to achieve.
Well, I had been pondering on the idea. So, you know, bringing an idea to or a project to the hackathon doesn't start 5 minutes before. It starts months and months before. And so I'd started to ponder upon what can we do for accessibility for companies and people to make their life easier, that is being overlooked. Now, one of the things that has been massively overlooked are infographics. And infographics are medical data. You go into a medical website and it says, talks about percentages, or it talks about ingredients, or it talks about whatever in a graphic. But it's also Amazon that I don't know if you ever go shopping on Amazon. I find it a very frustrating experience when you go shop for clothing on Amazon, and then it's going to give you this chart with large, extra large, extra, 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 extra large, you know, and then I click on those and I'm like, this is not HTML. This is an image.
Yeah, the data, the information is held inside just an image, like a JPEG.
It's inside an image. And And they, I think one of the reasons it's like that is because of the possibilities that they offer or do not offer. Let me put it that way. Apparently, I've never seen the back end of Amazon. I admit that. But apparently, you can't make it very sexy if you have to follow the tools they have. So people are often much inclined to put something in an image. It's the same thing with newsletters. It's horrible. People send beautiful newsletters and then you look at it and like, yeah, I can see why this is graphically so grown up, because it's all images. And what a lot of merchants don't realize, or any company or whatever, is that they are excluding millions of people with that. And so with the team that I start to build beforehand, I had someone who was willing to be a project manager and someone who was going to do the design, because that's what I learned from the previous year. You have to become so well prepared. You have to divide your tasks even before you start, because if you have to start doing that at the beginning of your project, you're going to fail. So we've been thinking about how can we do that? And then the idea was, let's write an iteration on how you could leverage AI to recognize an infographic for you and then spit out either a table with information or general information about it. And especially in the medical world, this is incredibly important. People's lives depend on it. And it was amazing. The team was so great. So in the end, instead of just writing the iteration and writing like, this is how you're going to do it, this is how you prompt the AI, this is how you... We ended up with a functional WordPress plugin. It's I still get how do you say, goosebumps when I think
goosebumps.
About it. That plugin,
yeah.
I actually have a link for you where people can try it out. I'm a bit reluctant to share it, because if people would start throwing hundreds of images to that, I don't know what it's going to do to our bill. But this team proved that you could make a working product. And it's still there. The explanations are there. It has a dedicated website. And And it just worked. And just this morning, I tried again. You know, there is this fantastic research that Semrush did in August about what does accessibility do for SEO? Well, great things, obviously. And of course, Semrush makes the same mistake. They put their image in there with their beautiful graphic, like 29% more of this and 60% more of that or whatever. I can't remember numbers for the life of me.
Yeah.
But, and I whacked it through the generator. I uploaded it and it just worked. It just gave me the markdown. I could also get the HTML, whatever. So this can potentially save companies millions and millions and millions because they have so many infographics. This could be commercialized, but the base needs to stay open source no matter what. Yeah. And so, yeah, that was the project. And it was fascinating.
Oh, I mean, it really was fascinating. I'm just going to sort of reprise a bit of that in case anybody listening kind of missed it. So you've all seen these infographics before. So medical is a really good example, but you more or less go into any website where there's data being presented. And it is obviously sighted people. They have this penchant for creating a graphic to show it off. So they'll create, I don't know, a pie chart, or they'll create a line graph, or they'll create a bar chart, and then they'll put the information in the image about that pie chart rather than writing it as semantic HTML or something underneath the image. So all the data is in an image. And obviously, if you can't see the image, none of that is available to you because it's all as text on an image or as charts on an image or what have you. And so that was the promise. And I was a bit like you. I was pretty skeptical when you said at the beginning that, you know, here's what we want to do. We'd like to make it so that you basically chuck in an image into your WordPress blog post or whatever it may be. The plugin that we intend to build will then, like, in some magical way, send that image off to some API endpoint of, I don't know where, but at some AI API endpoint that will then summarize what's in the image, and it will then give us text back mm-hmm. about what's in the image. So yeah, like I said, fairly skeptical, thinking, yeah, maybe not, this will be fascinating. Oh, it just did it all. And it was able to get the finest detail out of the images.
Yeah, we uploaded some really crappy images to test that. Yeah.
But things where even to me, so you uploaded images and you demonstrated images where even to me, it wasn't entirely obvious that slice of the pie, for example, was 29% or mm-hmm. whatever it may have been. And it figured it all out. And then it summarizes it. And then, you know, I guess you can put that information wherever you like, but presumably a good place to put it would be directly below the image. But then it didn't just sort of summarize it in a way that, you know, in an unclear way. It did it in human readable text. So whole sentences encapsulating what this chart was not only about, but then it would kind of bullet point. Okay, the top item was this and this and this with, you know, with percentages. And essentially, it parsed that image and presented the actual information as if you'd have been stood up on a lectern reading out, trying to explain what was in that image. So firstly, that was the most astonishing thing. And the second most astonishing thing was that you managed to do it in 3 days. that's just nuts.
It's nuts, but
it is nuts.
But this is essential about the hackathon in general. This is I don't know how you say it, a gathering of some of the most brilliant minds.
Yeah.
From all over the world. And they come together, and some might feel like, oh, this is very much, hey, everybody knows everybody here. But last year I saw a lot of new faces. And currently there are quite a lot of people that we know from the WordPress space. I love WordPress. There is no doubt about that. But I would love to see people from other spaces as well. Oh, we did have a lot of people from the Joomla team. Mm-hmm. They're fantastic. They know a lot about accessibility. And yeah, and it's of course people with a lot of hosting knowledge, for example, but we also had some people there with knowledge about AI in a practical sense that was mind-boggling. It's just, and I think because these people are all coming for the same thing, you know, a hackathon starts months before. It starts when the people who run the project start putting these projects online, because you can see, hey, I want to be in that project. I want to attend. I want to apply. I want to... So people are coming informed and usually already have an idea of where they want to go.
Yeah, and I think the bit that you touched on there was that there's so many people from different disciplines. Mm. And so I don't know the exact numbers on your team, but maybe it was like 10 or something like that people.
No, roughly. Our team started off so big. We actually had to make it a bit smaller. On top of my head, I think it was 16.
Wait, okay.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Yeah, 16 people we won.
16 people. And those 16 people are from a wide variety of backgrounds. So obviously, you know, you wouldn't be able to pull this off if every single person was, I don't know, if their area of expertise was solely accessibility. You wouldn't be able to pull this off if everybody's area of expertise was marketing.
Project
or if everybody's
management.
Area of right, so it's got to be this sort of like, you know, there's a few developers here sprinkled around and there's some accessibility focused people over here. And you got this little team together. That's quite interesting to start with. The dynamics of that, the fact that collection of random people put together could actually get along and understand the project and realize what was needed. And I guess that's where you step in, the project leader, making sure that everybody's got the memo, if you like, before it all begins.
I think that's an essential thing, because I think I'm good at project leading and motivating, but I suck as a project manager.
Did somebody step in and kind of take that role away from you, or what?
Yeah,
happened?
So this is why I literally asked someone with strong knowledge of development processes to be the project manager.
Okay.
And then one for the design as well. And that was an essential difference compared to what we did the year before. Yeah, it has to be that. And what I love about it is that I was asking people, like, don't you want to apply for the hackathon? You would be great in projects for, I don't know, social media, or for marketing, or writing copy. Because I think if you have a hackathon project, and I'm going to get to that point again later, one of the things that makes me sad about the hackathon currently is that projects are dead in the water.
Sort of run out when the hackathon itself comes to an end.
Yes. Well, that's my impression. I mean, my projects both are dead in the water, where they both have incredible commercial potential. And it's not like people weren't interested with this project from this year, from 2025. I had several people approaching me like, hey, we would like to join this, we would like to invest in this, we would like to, and I was like a lame duck. I was like, what am I going to do now? Where am I going to go now? I need to talk to the team. What are the consequences? We don't know. I still don't know that up to today, because you are working with people who are there for the hackathon who are employed. Some of them are self-employed.
Yeah.
A project is eligible for funding. People might want to fund it, you know. And then how are you going to get those people to work on the project continuously? How do you prevent an atmosphere when someone says, oh, well, hold on a minute. I've worked on this for 3 days and nights, literally. And now guys are all going to get paid to proceed. What am I going to do? The other hand, the other side of it is where people say, I wish I could continue to work on this project, but I am employed. I can't afford. I'm not allowed to do something on the side.
Yeah.
That is just, I don't know. I wish that there was something like, I just, you know, there's this thing called an accelerator program. I just recently learned about the German accelerator program because Grade was in it. You know, I'm involved a lot with the guys from Grade Suite, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And this is where the brilliant minds who do business, who can bring funding, who can make this thing grow and thrive, come in and guide you and teach you how to do that. And I think that is a part that is missing. So they started promoting that last year. I really loved it. Terry Miller, for example, he was in the jury in the organization. He's very experienced in investing and all that. And we had a lot of great talks about it. But we are not that. We are designers, developers, content creators. We're not the CEO of a project that wants to make enough money so everybody gets funded and a project comes to fruition. What do you call it?
Yeah, fruition. That's right.
Fruition.
Yeah.
English language.
So it seems like, so first of all, the process itself is really interesting. You know, you love all of that bit of it, the getting together, spending 3 days, organizing the team, wrangling that, spitting the project out, all of that, you know, all of that side of it is really mm-hmm. interesting. But there's this sort of slightly unusual portion where once the winner has been announced and all of the different teams go back to their own lives, the projects kind of stall. So your suggestion potentially there is that, I don't know, maybe the winner, wouldn't necessarily have to be the winner, of course, but no. let's imagine that the winner in this case would sort of drop in like a prize, if you like. The result of winning would be that you drop into some sort of, I don't know, incubator program. Another thought that I have around that is, what if, for example, by winning, a bunch of industry experts were to not just be part of the decision process about who won, because if you think about that environment in Roost at that time, there's probably like, I don't know, 10,000, 12,000 more people from all over the world in all sorts of industries. It'd be kind of interesting if some of them could be parachuted in for the final demonstrations to see the output. You know, a handful, maybe 20, 30, 50 kind of put on a balcony. Right, watch this. This is what these people did over this period of time. And then they, of their own volition, could say, you know what, that project is interesting for my company. We could spin that out into a thing.
But also, you know, and again, this is also touching on one of those hidden problems, I'd say, because of course, this hackathon is being sponsored, okay? Sponsors are super generous. They are investing so much money that this can happen. All these people that need to come, that need to stay, that need to eat, that need to drink, that need to hang. And it's like, I would think as a sponsor, you would like to see more ROI on that. So maybe there could be more involvement from the sponsors through the organization on making that what you just suggested happen. Maybe they're working on it already, right? I mean, I hope they don't bite my head off right now about this.
I think it's interesting because you've got a perspective on it, haven't you? And you know, you're not criticizing the process. It's just kind of what happened after the process. It'd be what kind of interesting.
What was interesting as well and frustrating at the same. There were two things where I'm like, let's try to see if that can be done differently the next time. And that is that from the participants, a lot of their companies are also on CloudFest, right? So the hackathon is starting, is 2 or 3 days before. And then in the morning when the whole thing goes through, like the winners are being announced and whatever, CloudFest itself actually starts. And then large numbers of people are suddenly not present in the room because they have to be present in their booths.
Yeah.
And I wish that they could organize this differently. I don't know if it's possible, but it would be, or make this hackathon, the results, a highlight in the CloudFest itself.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. I know that they do announce them on one of the sort of stages, don't they? I mm-hmm. seem to remember this year that there was it almost looked like a boxing ring, if memory serves.
Yeah, the boxing ring.
Yeah, it was a boxing
ring.
That's right.
But you know, the boxing ring is very small, whereas some of the projects were so impactful. It was absolutely crazy. The quality of all of these projects.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was extremely high. Honestly, the fact that my team won and accessibility won for the second time in a row was super unexpected for me. We've had some hurdles, and when I look at all the other projects that were there, I'm like, there were so many other projects so deserving of this. And then there is this thing like, okay, say they managed to do that, to organize that and say, let's go and present these projects on stage. The time pressure is insane.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is understandable. But not everybody feels comfortable presenting their project. There are some people who are really good at it, and there are some people who are just shy or find it difficult to show off or whatever. And maybe in that direction, we can think of something to help them. I mean, we do that in work camps as well. We have MCs on stage for a reason. Imagine someone starts to announce themselves.
Asking questions. So it's more question and answer rather than you've got 10 minutes or 3 minutes or whatever to sum up your project.
Yeah.
It could be a sort of more of a Q&A format where somebody guides those people through it. Yeah, that's interesting. So I guess one of the questions that I was going to ask is, what has the long-term impact been then? And it sounds to me as if it the breaks went on after the event itself, and the project, while still there, hasn't moved forward. So I wonder if one of the things that might possibly be a good idea is that, let's say, for example, you have a winner and a second place and a third place or whatever it may be. I wonder if those projects could be picked up automatically next year. You know, what I'm saying is that the result of being the winner is that your project automatically gets put into the next hackathon so that it could be continued. I know it's a long time, you know, you've got another 12 months to wait or what have you, but at least you'd have that certainty that, okay, we captured that. That was our 3 days, and we're going to put it down for a little bit. And then in a year's time, if nothing else happens in that year, we know that we're going to come back and have another crack at the whip and see if we can extend it and make it more interesting. That's maybe another possibility I thought of.
Yeah, I think it depends much on the project. So some projects need to hit the ground running and get going. And some could really use that. And I mean, it's exactly as you say, if nothing else happens in the meantime.
Do you, on balance though, even though the project may have sort of stalled, obviously you got where you got, do you still like the sort of hackathon format? Is it something that you'll be taking part in next year, applying to take part in next year?
Yes, I'm already working on a project idea with a group of people.
You love it.
Iterating on what we could do, see if we can find another topic, because there are so many topics, and again, it needs to benefit, really, I'm going to say the millions of people. Otherwise, to me, it's just boring. So we're working on it, and obviously, of course, if we could iterate not on the project from last year, because that thing has a website, that thing is there, the documentation
is ready to roll.
Anyone could go with that and go on a roll. And of course, would need funding to develop it further. But my first project is still super, super potential. And I think there are other projects like that. I don't know, for some projects that would be good to proceed after a year.
Yeah, but not for everything. Some things you tie it off after 3 days and that's it. You are genuinely done with it.
Yeah,
didn't work.
Some things were meant to be done.
Yeah,
you know?
some things might work, some things might not. Because it's not the... Actually, what was amazing is in that room, pretty much all the projects, not every project, but pretty much all the projects really did astonishing work, you know, from ground zero, no minutes, no seconds, and then sort of basically 3 days later when they presented what they'd done. In every case, a lot of progress had been made. And it was kind of interesting what some of the expectations of those projects were. So in your case, it turned out that you could ship an actual thing. But some of the other projects, the idea was more about let's scaffold what the thing might be in the near future. You know, if we can take this after the hackathon, we're just going to scaffold what that would look like and figure out what the questions are that we need to ask and yada, yada, yada. So it's kind of, you know, having a finished thing is not necessarily the point of the hackathon.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, I think something that they did great this year was getting the coaches, the juries, the experts to visit every project, to give guidance to asking, what are you running into? And I think that if it were something that would go on the year after, maybe that's something that they could do and appoint people to keep coaching these projects to go somewhere and get people to think about these things. And you know, the other thing is we're talking about human beings and people like new stuff.
Yeah, well, that's true.
I don't know if you would bring in a project after a year again to continue with it. I'm not sure that would get you a lot of
What's kind of interesting about your one, though, is that like there really is a commercial angle to it. It
Both
does feel, you know, that if somebody was to pick that up and even if they just took on board what you'd done already and kind of went with that, it feels like within a very short space of time, you could turn that into a commercial thing, you know, something where you're charging a subscription or an annual fee.
Yeah, that's what I was really hoping for, that was going to happen. Maybe that is going to happen. I don't know. Maybe someone is listening now and is like, oh gosh, I gotta get in touch with that person to talk about this. Of course, the first and foremost, this is for open source. So this has to stay open source at all costs.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, where you would think about subscription models and stuff is, of course, this is running using AI.
Yeah.
And the AI costs money. And so we've done it in such a way now that people could hook up AI through their API voodoo, you know, and use it. But I can imagine if a big company like, I don't know, Nike wants to do this for their web shop or maybe even Amazon or whatever, then you're going to talk about AI usage that is going to save them millions, because we calculated that. We calculated how long does it take you to make these descriptions manually, how much more ROI is going to give you this on your shop. You know, again, I hit them with the money stick. And this is the part where we could probably commercialize it. And what I would love to see from big open source projects like this that are being sponsored and co-funded either by talent or money is that profits from this project flow back into open source.
Yeah.
It's like everybody gets paid for their time and the rest of the money goes into funding whatever is important at that time. And I might be segueing a little bit, but there is a PHP project that Juliet Rimes-Folmer took over.
You know, the project Sniffer and things like that. Yeah.
And that's the project. If someone is asking me, like, and where would you put your money in first because it benefits the world? It's that. Because I know in that project, people depend on one person, and that is very uncomfortable. If anything ever happens, then nobody knows. And this is dangerous. This is like AI going down or AWS going down like we had yesterday. And yeah, the thing is, people are going to stand there and say...
It took the world out, didn't it? Yeah.
They're going like, huh? What happened?
Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting. It was really an interesting day. And Cloudflare got a lot of bad PR out of all of that. And luckily, they were, I think, able to get it back up and running. And they were fairly apologetic about it. But I know what you mean.
People do not realize that the internet is fueled by Linux. Their hosting companies need it. The same thing with PHP. All these developers saying, the PHP is the language of the Stone Age or whatever. I'm like, what rock are you living under?
Yeah, the whole project that Juliet is sort of shepherding, we actually did do a podcast with her a little while ago, and it was kind of interesting listening to her take on it. I didn't realize that things hadn't changed. But she's not exaggerating.
I'm sorry that I'm just hijacking the opportunity to talk about this, but this is what I feel like. I mean, there's the hackathon is also, and CloudFest itself is especially CloudFest is also now making this corner for WordPress. And to me, that's like, we're making a corner for open source. But this is the thing that I really want to give as my peace of mind to the hackathon and any project like that. I mean, there are more hackathons in the world, many, many more. That if there were accelerators joining these projects and helping these people to turn that into something viable and more than the MVP, you know, that a certain percentage, and I hope it's a large one, flows back into these things, because people up until today think open source should be free.
Well, yeah, that's what people think.
It is freely available. It's not free. That's a language thing. So, I think that would be really great, and that would also make it again very sexy for many companies to sponsor it, because they can plaster their name all over it.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because we've done the whole gamut of this thing, really. So we talked about the hackathon and how much you enjoyed it and how it worked, and we've talked about maybe some constraints where it kind of just sort of dries up a little bit. Maybe there's opportunities for an incubator or and some sort of accelerator program to step in after the fact, people to come from the wider CloudFest to come and see what the end result is, and maybe there'd be some interest there. So that's kind of really interesting. I'm curious to end this on potentially getting that project a little bit more attention, the one with the infographics. I will link to it in the show notes. Before we hang up the call, I'll make sure that I get the URL for that and I'll pop it into the show notes. If somebody having listened to this who thinks that's a fascinating project, I want to take that on, or I want to at least talk to you about it, what's the best place to be in touch with you?
Send me a DM on LinkedIn.
Okay.
Or find me on Twitter. Or send me an email. My contact data are on my website. And if you put my name spelled correctly in the show notes,
I will.
Someone adds that to Google, they're going to get...
There's only one of you, with that name. Okay. Yeah. In which case, the bits that I can do, I will put into the show notes. So go and search for the episode on WP Builds. But if fails, go to Google and have a search around there as well.
I'm really grateful for that. Thank you so much.
Very, very welcome. Thank you for joining me today. That was a very pleasant chat. And best of luck if you do get into the hackathon next time around. Best of luck. And I hope that you win it.
That would be accessibility three times in a row. But accessibility is boring, right?
Okay, that's all we've got for you today. I hope that you enjoyed that. If you've got any intuitions or anything you want to say, head to wpbuilds.com, search for episode number 449, and leave us a comment there. We'd really appreciate it. And don't forget, the hackathon is taking place in the year 2026. Google it or look for the link in the show notes if you've got any curiosity about that. And you could find yourself in that room with all of those marketers, developers, SEO experts, a whole range of different people all in one room trying to solve a variety of problems. The energy is pretty remarkable. And like I said, links in the show notes. Go check it out. Okay, that's all I've got for you today. I am going to fade in a little bit of cheesy music and say, stay safe, have a good week. Bye-bye for now.